Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to a special edition of The Big Interview. My name is Martin Gregg and today we are previewing the Champions League last 16 second leg tie between Barcelona and Napoli. And in doing so, we'll be casting an eye back to the conclusion of the La Liga season from the Catalan club's perspective. I'm joined by the host of The Big Interview, Graham Hunter. Now, given all that's happened in between times, we thought it was time for a little refresher on the first leg tie. So if we start with Barcelona, they drew 1-1 with Napoli on February the 25th. Dries Mertens opened the scoring, Antoine Griezmann equalised and Vidal was sent off right at the death for a tackle and then an aggressive head movement in the aftermath. Before the Napoli first leg, Barcelona had beaten Eibar 5-0 and Madrid had lost to Levante to give Barcelona a 2-point lead at the top of La Liga. Then there was a Napoli game, then Barcelona lost to Clásico 2-0 the following weekend, then it was a 1-0 win over Real Sociedad. Then it was lockdown. So after lockdown, Barcelona played 11 games between June the 13th and July the 19th. They won 8, drew 2 and lost once to Osasuna at home. And as you may know, they ended up losing the league by 5 points to Real Madrid. So we're going to take a snapshot of Barcelona in the aftermath of that 1-1 draw. How did that result look then? And what has happened in the ensuing months to change the complexion of the tie, Graham Hunter?
Look, it was ghost football in the south of Italy. It was ghost football somewhat in the way that they played in Turin when they were beaten 3-0 by Juventus, somewhat of the way that they played when they were pumped by Roma to go out. You know, you could equate it to Paris when they lost 4-0 to Paris Saint-Germain, Anfield, and yet they got a 1-1 draw, which speaks something about Napoli's slight inability to deliver a killer goal that night. Barcelona that night woke up a little bit, played better football in the second half, moved the ball much more quickly, took more risks, is an actual fact. But Napoli struck me as a side which had the running, the daring, the aerial game, which should have damaged Barcelona more and can still knock them out. You talked about the difference of no crowd. The Camp Nou is a big deal. The Camp Nou is not a hideous, imposing, malevolent atmosphere to go into, but it daunts a lot of players. It's such a beautiful, iconic stadium. It can get noisy in terms of if you let Barcelona get on top of you, if you let them move the gear up, put their foot down on the pedal, the singing, the deification of Messi, the Barca, 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 can weave a hypnotic spell on some players. That they can, you know, negativity infests the minds of many people. And I've watched teams playing well go 1-0 down at the Camp Nou to Barcelona, in Europe particularly, where they haven't been beaten at home since the Bayern Munich match, which ended up, 7-something, I think, 4 in Bavaria and 3 at Camp Nou. So the lack of a Camp Nou crowd is an element. It's a big loss. And on that night, one of the things you'd say about Football Club Barcelona is that they were, you know, they were slow. They were lacking Luis Suarez in terms of hold-up play, in terms of the damage that he can do by making Messi an even better footballer. Suarez notoriously hasn't scored away from home for, I mean, it's over 5 years now since Rome in a 1-1 draw. But when he plays, Messi is a superior footballer to when he doesn't play. It's that simple. And I'll tell you something now. Barcelona have also been enjoying slightly shorter holidays than Real Madrid, but Suarez looks as trim as I can remember him since they won the treble in 2015. I think that's a deliberate effort from him. I think he wants to see out the last year of his contract. He's somebody who's been saying to Barcelona, you know, why haven't you bought another centre-forward by now? You need one. I'm this age. My contract is at X stage, 1 year to go. He's actually been in a handful of interviews saying, I'd accept another centre-forward. And Griezmann's not a centre-forward. That was known, you know, before he came. So I look at Messi's desire to win the Champions League. I look at Suarez's regained fitness. I look at the way that Suarez and Messi played against Villarreal, where they thrashed them. And away at Alaves in the last day of the season, when Alaves admittedly had been celebrating staying up. But it's those flashes of energy and brilliance and wit contrast so much with the flaccid, lazy, slow, stupid, characterless football which Barcelona are capable of producing just about 3 out of every 4 games. Before restart, I tipped Real Madrid to win the title, even though there was a points deficit. I was right about that, and I thought it was blatantly obvious that Barcelona would not get through a series of matches which included really difficult ties, but you know, probably the two key ones where I thought they'd drop points were Sevilla away and Atleti at home. And they found it very hard to sustain a lead. There's an open season on the types of criticisms which should have been pungent and important for 2 or 3 years now after the defeat to Osasuna at home, where they lost to a 10-man Osasuna side. And albeit that Osasuna were hard-running, clever, took risks, are really well coached by Jagoba Arasate, whose brand of football I really enjoy. And for them to do what they've done despite losing their key striker in Chimi Avila was off the scale. Where they finished and to go to Camp Nou and win as they did with 10 men, it's just off the scale. It was wonderful. Messi's diatribe afterwards about we won't win the Champions League if we keep playing like we're doing. Not like tonight, he said. This is like we're doing. We're too irregular. We need a massive autopsy. We need a massive sense of self-criticism from top to bottom in the club. So rather than long-winded answers that link the game in Sao Paulo in South Italy to now, Martin, let me just list what I see as the major problems. Athletically, Barcelona are not all that. They can be out-jumped, they can be made to turn, they can be outrun, and they haven't got this focused all for one, one for all. I'll put in effort, even if my teammate has lost the ball. I'll work back, I'll anticipate, I'll press, I'll track. That has diminished, and it's diminished pretty horribly. So the gap between them and sides with lesser ability has closed. Secondly, Quique Setién has been an awful appointment. I'm sad to say that because I love the football he got Las Palmas playing. I love the football he got Betis playing. And remember, Betis won at Camp Nou in a monstrous game 4-3. They won sequentially 1-0 and 1-0 at Real Madrid. And when a Quique Setién team is using the ball and moving in the way that he wants them to, they're just luxuriously, they're imperial leather is what they are. They're luxuriously good to watch. But his ability and the ability of his second-in-command, Eder Sarabia, to understand the group of footballers and to understand the club that he's at, failed. He fell out with the director of football at Las Palmas. He, on leaving Betis, where he was sacked, which I criticised the club for, he said, well, maybe I've failed to understand the culture down here. Well, he also failed to learn. He's failed to understand what was needed, or to either to anticipate or to understand what was needed at Football Club Barcelona. He was brought by an agent, his agent, to a club where his agent has then got himself involved in selling certain players. I think that's wrong. I think that's debilitating. The open warfare between him and his second-in-command and hard-nosed senior players like Suarez and Messi and Alba, and to a lesser degree Busquets and Piqué, means that I would have, had I been in charge of the club, if I'd been in charge of the club, then there's about a million and one decisions that we shouldn't have made. But I'd have been extremely tempted to think about changing coach before the Champions League, which sounds drastic, but there is a breakdown between the players and the coach, which means that at the moment, and I mean this separately from all the calumnies that have been thrown their way, it'll largely be the players running it. It'll be the coach giving the players largely what they want. Against Osasuna, Setién tried to slap down his major critics in the side and left out Suarez and Alba and put out a side which was lopsided, which wasn't ready for the competition, where Messi was like, what have you done? What have you left me out here without my key lieutenants? It was ludicrous. And to add slightly more prosaic problems into the mix, right now, as we speak, they've got one fit centre-half. Longley, I think, should make it okay, but you know, it's going to be hard work to get him in full peak condition for the Napoli tie at Camp Nou. So Piqué and Longley. Umtiti, I think, is out for the season. Araujo, the kid who looks a prospect, is at this stage, and okay, we need a telescope to see the match. It's still significantly far away. There is a huge risk that Araujo doesn't make it, leaving Barcelona struggling for a third centre-half. So there's time for these injury situations to adapt, but Umtiti's not going to make it. Dembele is not going to make it. You've pointed out that Vidal is absent for the return leg. There's no way to compare the two footballers, but it's a plus that in recent weeks De Jong has been injured but is now back fully fit and able to add something to the midfield. It's a plus that Ricky Puig has been trusted. I mean, again, you couldn't get a more stark contrast in midfield play between Ricky Puig and Arturo Vidal. But Puig and Messi understand each other, play well together. De Jong being back and being fit and full of energy and having had time to assimilate what's going on in his first season, that's a plus. If you watched the way that Gattuso's side so stubbornly edged past Juventus to win the Coppa Italia, if you look at the way in which they have run their campaign since restart, they've had injury problems. It looks like Manolo might not be playing. They had striker problems when there were both injuries and suspensions. Obviously, the suspensions domestically don't count for next weekend in the Champions League. But if they can bring something like their first 11 to Camp Nou, then the two biggest factors that might prevent Napoli going through, which I think they're capable of doing, I genuinely think Napoli are capable of going through, would be Messi, Suarez, because when they're united, they can still do extraordinary things. It's impossible for a 33-year-old and a 34-year-old to win the league together when there are so many other debilitating factors in their team, although they damn near, you know, they made it a damn good fight until the penultimate match. Another thing which I find extraordinary, that the state of the football thinking and football behaviour around them at the club can have sunk by so many degrees, yet the really hard-nosed guys there, Piqué, who's had a brilliant season, Stegen, who's had a brilliant season, Suarez and Messi, and then I'm struggling for anything other than bit part players, dragged Barcelona all the way to the penultimate day. I'm not a Barca fan, and Barca fans will take a long time to get rid of the pain of watching Real Madrid winning against a Barcelona side which played quite a lot of impoverished matches in their 38 games. But the achievement of just through sheer will getting to the final day, pardon me, the penultimate day, and still being in it, and had they beaten Osasuna, it would have gone to the final day. It is testimony to these guys are blooming ninja samurai warriors is what they are. But they run a risk. They run a risk against Napoli. And the other big factor I was talking about, sorry, about Napoli carry into this Camp Nou match as a potential risk about travelling onwards to the quarterfinal in Lisbon, is that they too have been playing, you know, every 3 days, and they'll have slightly less rest. Barcelona and Real Madrid needed the rest, needed a break. The intensity, I can tell everybody, the intensity, you know, we were only working as journalists and broadcasters, but talking to the footballers, the physios, the managers, the subs, the scouts, the administrative staff, the intensity of playing a full round of games every 3 days for 6 weeks really cost. Napoli just won't have quite the amount of time off that might have helped them refresh a little bit. But I view them as, you know, not favourites to go through, but candidates to win and candidates to knock Barcelona out. And it's such a hard second leg to call.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewellery from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, it feels like we could do a separate podcast on the structural problems within Barcelona, but I mean, the Setién issue, it's quite interesting the way you were talking about it there. It seems to boil down to his inability to manage the squad and manage the egos within that squad. And I wonder, if is there a little counterpoint to Zidane here, where, you know, you talk about Zidane being the kind of the player whisperer. You know, he manages to convey, push the right buttons in these world-class talents that are under his control. Is there something about the way these two men have managed their squads since the last time they kicked the ball in the Champions League which kind of defines how things have gone in between in the subsequent, you know, 5 or 6 months?
I use that phrase about Zidane because we both know that it's an advantage to have played elite football if you're dealing with elite footballers. But it does not automatically mean that you're better than a guy who's had an average career if that guy is a brilliant coach, a brilliant communicator, an inspirational man manager. So Zidane, I think, benefits from both those traits. I think that automatically he's granted a little bit of room and respect because he's Zidane. But that would last about 2 weeks if he wasn't any good on a daily basis, if the results weren't coming on a weekend basis. What he's proved utterly sensational at is inspiring the group, but also inspiring individually. And it's cruel to Setién because, as is often the case in football, right is wrong and wrong is right. Black is white and white is black. Setién came to Barcelona and having been a very able midfielder for Racing Santander, who was inspired by the Johan Cruyff idea that he was playing against when he played the Dream Team. He came aged 59, 60 to Camp Nou, and it's like players who come and want to change jerseys with Messi at halftime. Setién wanted to play in the Rondos. Now, that was a shit decision. I mean, if you do that, you put everything. If you're a card player who goes all in the first round. And that's just wrong. And the players laughed at him. the players I know could see that he had a touch, but he was, you know, he was never of the level. He was at the wrong age, as lithe and fit as he is. Instead of impressing them with his decision making, his strategy, his tactics, his discourses, either one on one in groups, he put his credibility on the line in training, and then got them doing little fancy games about tasks that they did blindfolded. And you sell your jersey in the first couple of weeks, and then you start letting your assistant create enmities, and then you say certain things in public which the players don't like, and there's an exchange of words with Messi via media. It was one misstep after another, and it's been catastrophic. With Real Madrid, think about what Zidane came in, I think, in March 2019. He'd walked away saying that Madrid needed to find new behaviour patterns, that they wouldn't keep winning with him. And it's just like a parent with a kid. He walked away saying things aren't right, and he meant upwards, not just downwards to the squad. They went through a clutch of coaches quickly, and he came back, and the results initially when Zidane came back were pretty awful. He was all the time not just saying to those around him, but showing them, I was right, you weren't paying attention, now pay attention. And the change in attitude, the change, if you look at it either just with the naked eye or via results or via stats, it doesn't matter. Everything has tightened. Daily behaviour has tightened. Quality of training has tightened. Their finishing has tightened. Their defensive positioning, the defensive work, the number of times they lose the ball, the number of times they win the ball back, number of goals they conceded. It's the least goals that Real Madrid have conceded for, you know, pretty much in living memory. Now, everybody's got to contribute to that. But Zidane is the lightning conductor, without any question. He does things that are right time after time after time, and they're not always gigantic movements of the chessboard. They're little incremental positive daily attitudes, routines, sayings. And even if he's not Pep, in terms of ability to get to players, he's the closest thing to Pep. He's not as intense, he's not as condemnatory if somebody's not onside. He can wean players back in. If you're out, you're out. He's a hard man. Like, for example, Ceballos has cooked his goose with Zidane. Reguilon was out because of a dispute with Zidane's son, who's the goalkeeper at Castilla, Real Madrid B. You know, if you step on his toes badly, then, well, we only need to go back to the 2006 World Cup or the sending off for Juventus against Hamburg, or the stamp on a Saudi Arabian player in 98 in the World Cup. You don't want to cross him, but those are rare moments now. This is a guy who persuades, who teaches, who inspires. And then what we saw this season was, you know, what's he been? He's been in charge. I'm clutching at figures, Martin. So, and listeners, excuse me if I miss if I'm out by 3 or 4. Maybe he's coached about Real Madrid about 217 times, 215 times. He's changed his formation about 195 times in that. So sequentially, you'll get a different 11 week after week after week after week. That used to be anathema to every big club, every big coach. Find your 11, rotate it, yes, but get as close to your 11, and whenever you can stick to your best 11, use it. Not for Zidane. People, I thought lazy people, because from the start I didn't say, I can see Zidane's going to be an elite coach, don't worry about it. But I could see that he was doing enough right that he needed to be given time. But the clever guys who are always at the top table sneering at everybody else, and I mean in the media predominantly, were like, you see, but he can work with people, but he's got no tactical nous. Well, bullshit. What we saw latterly this season were changes of formation from 4-5-1, 4-3-3, 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, And it doesn't mean that in every instance he was absolutely right, but he got his players absolutely convinced about what they were doing and effecting it perfectly. He played a big role in how they played those 10 straight wins, I thought. He's created a meritocracy where the subs, like they did in his first spell in charge, absolutely believe they've got to stay sharp and be competitive, because they know. I mean, in the run-in, he gave Bale and James starting chances. Now, the rest of the time, he might be accused of isolating them and basically sending them to Coventry, which is one of your favourite phrases. But he is somebody who will try to recuperate a footballer, whether it's in terms of psychology, spirits, relationships. You get your chances under Zidane. That's a really big thing. So I think that it is not the case that he's some sort of Midas king who came into a very talented squad a couple of times, touched him on the shoulder and everything worked. I think that he is increasingly developing. He said it himself recently. I'll always have been a better player than I am a coach. So fine, because he was a damn wonderful footballer. But in terms of coaching, I think that he is far more rounded than people understand. I think that he's deeply influential in asking players to do tasks that previously they weren't that keen on. He gave Rodrigo start after start after start in the run-in. And having begun that run at San Mamés against Athletic and not looking all that convincing, Zidane kept faith and Rodrigo started to produce. These are little things that make the difference between you being an average coach and a very good coach. And I think that he is a very good coach. And I'm no Madridista either, but for the quality of football and for the quality of discourse that we get in La Liga, I hope he stays for as long as possible.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.